Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. And I want to give a welcome to all of our listeners down in the Fort Pierce area and south down into Martin County and I guess even Palm Beach County and out into Okeechobee County, because this is our first show on WQCS out of Fort Pierce, out of the Indian River State College there. So we're being co-broadcast now on WFIT here in Melbourne and on WQCS. So this is kind of a red letter day for American Variety. Those who've been listening up in the Melbourne area and north up here know that periodically we have a theme on American Variety called Old Florida Day. So I want to welcome my guest today, who's the owner of the Adams Ranch and has actively managed the Adams Ranch out west of Fort Pierce since 1948. His name is Mr. Alto Bud Adams Jr. Welcome, Bud.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have you on. And I think that's, I don't know, maybe you know, is that some sort of record that an individual has run a ranch for 60 years in this country? Are you the only person who could say that? I wouldn't be surprised if you are.
Well, no, old cattlemen live a long time.
They outlive all the cattle, huh? It occurs to me, you've got a very big ranch, but I'll bet you may be the oldest critter on that whole ranch. What do you think?
Not quite. I used to.
It could be some tortoises have outlived you still, huh? Well, Mr. Adams, why don't you start off describing the Adams Ranch and how it is and, you know, how big it is and where it extends to and what its various parts are.
The Adams Ranch originated out of a partnership, Alto Adams and Son. My father made me a partner in the ranch in 1948. He had bought the first land here in 1937. The ranch, as the family grew and the ranch grew, we incorporated so that instead of dividing the ranch off among family members, we would divide the shares among the family members and keep an efficient operation of a larger, more economical size. So the ranch was incorporated in 1963, and my three sons, Lee, Mike, and Rob, joined the management team, and they have been principal managers here for 25 to 40 years themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's a family operation, and now I have a nephew here, Peter Harrison, that is involved in the management, and four of the grandchildren, they would be the fourth generation, are now out of school and working here full-time, so yeah, it's a family endeavor.
You know, we hear about corporate farms. And I'm sure that there are corporate ranches as well, but is it still pretty common that a big spread will be owned by a single family over a period of several generations like that, a family ranch? Is that still pretty common, or is it getting rarer?
Well, the big ranches, like the King Ranch in Texas and different ones, they have generally been incorporated to keep them intact and their shares divided. I think Likes has done that. But a lot of the other ranches, they have given pieces of land off to different family members and divided it. So there's been two different ways of managing these ranches.
What about up in our area? There's the Duda Ranch, which is in the western part of the county and I guess is the biggest single ranch in this area. Extends over, I think, into Orange County. Do you know that family, and are they still...
The Deseret Ranch?
Yeah, that's right.
Deseret Ranch is the largest cow-calf ranch in America. Hmm. They're owned by the Mormon Church, and they're a very good ranch. And also up in your area, you have the Platts have been up there a long time, the Tuckers, and several others that have been there, the Partons, have been intermarried with all those families.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking today with my guest, Bud Adams, who has is the owner of the Adams Ranch west of Fort Pierce and has been actively operating that ranch since 1948, 60 years, along with many of his family members now. I guess it's a fourth-generation ranch at this point. How big is the Adams Ranch overall, Bud?
We started with about 16,000 acres here in St. Lucie County. We have a smaller ranch in Okeechobee County. Our largest ranch is in Osceola County. It fronts on Highway 60, and the northern fronts on Lake Marion. We have places in Madison County and in Georgia where we send our stocker calves and grow out our replacement heifers. So altogether, we probably have 55 to 60,000 acres.
Boy, that's a lot of land. You mentioned that the Deseret Ranch up in more east central Florida is the largest cattle operation, I guess you said, in the country. Where does the Adams Ranch stand in that ranking? Are you one of the largest?
I think we rank about 12th.
Well, that's really something. The 12th largest cattle ranch in the whole country. You'd think they'd all be
in the United States.
In the U.S. You'd think that the top 12 would all be in Texas, but I guess they're not. Where does Florida overall stand in terms of raising cattle and cattle and beef production now among the states? Do you know?
We rank behind Kentucky and maybe one other state in the southeast. Your biggest cattle states are Texas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas, and those plain states. So Florida does not have nearly as many cattle as those states have. But Florida has some of the biggest ranches simply because they haven't gone through that many generations of division. Deseret, Likes, and the Seminole Indian people, they have a very large operation. And so out of the 20 largest ranches in the United States, there's a sizable number from Florida.
So you're talking about the cattle so far, but does the Adams Ranch produce other products besides cattle and beef? And
we have a citrus operation. It has been hampered with disease and storms, but in North Florida we have pivot irrigation where crops are grown and different things are raised.
I want to talk a little later in the show, Bud, about how ranching has changed over the last 60 years, and I'm sure it has, but one thing that occurs to me is that maybe the largest crop for a lot of big farms and ranches in the last decade or more has been housing developments. Do you get a lot of pressure to sell to developers and allow, you know, developments to be built on that land, or have you done any of that yourselves?
Well, of course, land values have gone up. And that's a temptation to sell your land and get out of the cattle business. But we weren't interested in building houses, and so we really haven't sold any land for housing. And we hope that that will not come to pass, possibly through agricultural easements or something like that. We'll be able to keep the land in agriculture in perpetuity.
Well, good for you, and it must be some kind of testament to the skill with which you all and your family are running the ranch that you're not forced to do that for financial reasons. You're making a good living running the ranch and don't have to sell out that lifestyle that you have.
Yeah, we don't have to sell. The ranch is profitable, and it is financially secure.
I noticed that the Adams Ranch was named the Ranch of the Century by one agricultural organization in 1999. What was that about?
Well, that was a tremendous compliment. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association named us Ranch of the Century for the 20th century. That was one of four. Ours was for the southeastern United States.
Boy, I would say that's a compliment. I mean, there must be a couple hundred ranches in the southeastern U.S., and you were named the Ranch of the Century out of all of that. That really must have made you proud, huh? So you, I know that one notable thing about your ranch and your ranching operations has been that you founded a whole new breed called the Brayford. Why don't you tell us about that whole sequence of events, Bud, going back into the beginning of it, and why it got, why you did that, and how it got started?
Okay, I graduated from the University of Florida in February 1948 and came to the ranch. The ranch had a basic herd of common Brahma cows. They were well adjusted to the area, but they weren't very good beef cows. At that time, the Hereford was a predominant beef breed in the world, and so we crossed Hereford bulls on Brahma cows, and we liked the calves very much. It was not common to use any crossbred bulls. Universities did not recommend it. But our Hereford bulls did not last long down in the mosquitoes and the climate here. So kind of out of necessity, we were forced to use crossbred bulls. And in conversing with Dr. Coger, the geneticist at University of Florida, he said the crossbred bulls will not breed uniformly. But if you'd pick out the best ones, and the second generation would be more uniform, and if you do that for four generations, they would breed practically 100% true to type. We found Dr. Coger was right on the money.
So your first step was to take crossbred Brahman bulls. Now, Brahman bulls came from, I think, India,
We used purebred Hereford bulls to get crossbred bulls.
Oh, okay.
We mated those crossbred bulls to crossbred cows, and that led to the formation of the Brayford breed. It's the foundation herd now for Brayford cattle in America. It's the number one herd of the United Brayford breeders.
So the Brahman bull is a very distinctive-looking animal. I think they're kind of a grayish color, right? And the Hereford is more brown, more the classic look.
That's right.
So why don't you describe what the Brayford looks like? Is it dramatically different looking from a Hereford or from other cattle?
The Brayfords are colored like a Hereford. They're a red color with a white face. We've taken the hump off of them and given them a good beef conformation, but they retain the short hair and the heat tolerance of the Brahma. So by selection, we've tried to get the best characteristics of both breeds in one animal.
So crossbreeding and hybridizing like that is really almost like engineering another animal out of some starter materials.
Well, it really is, and it has been very interesting to see these cattle. We talk about the animals changing over countless centuries, but you can see that with a little selection, you can do it in a very few years.
Even so, it takes some patience. It's not like something in a laboratory where you just keep mixing up different chemicals and getting different results toward what you want. It still takes a period of years because you're going through the gestation cycle of the animal and taking what you want and rebreeding it to something else. So how long did it take you to get from your starting stock in that program to the Brayford that you have today?
It was recognized, the Brayford was a recognized breed for the USDA in 1969, so it essentially took about 20 years.
What are they like as a beef cow compared, as beef cattle compared to, let's say, a Hereford? Are they bigger, smaller? I mean, are they shaped differently? You said they have the same color as a Hereford, but how do they look otherwise?
They compare in size and shape to a Hereford. When you cross two distinct breeds, you get what you call heterosis that involves hybrid vigor. So the animals are very vigorous, they live well, and they grow fast, and they breed early. And that's the opposite of inbreeding. And it's like people that have been inbred, why, they lose a lot of vigor. And so the Brayford has been a very vigorous, commercially successful animal.
So you said it has high tolerance for heat and humidity and insects and, I guess, parasites and maybe some diseases that might be prevalent in the swampy tropical conditions. So does that make the Brayford that you developed attractive to cattlemen from other countries, tropical countries around the world? Or
they're attractive for people in a warm, humid climate. Louisiana, South Texas, Mississippi, Cuba, Latin America, all those countries that have a problem where they can't raise British or European cattle, why the Brayford will do well.
So you've kind of got a little export industry going there with your cattle that you developed, huh?
We export a few cattle.
Well, that's great. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking with rancher Bud Adams, owner and 60-year-long manager of the Adams Ranch out west of Fort Pierce in St. Lucie County, about his experiences with the ranch and his, particularly, we've just been talking about his development of the new breed, the Brayford breed, which has been accepted and is one of the established breeds in this country that he sells around the world. Well, I want to turn now, Bud, to, you know, again, going back to your six decades of experience, and I guess even more on the ranch since it started in 1937, really 71 years that ranch has been there, which takes
takes you back
to when you were a little guy. But throughout that whole time, your lifetime on the ranch, I guess that's been your only job so far, huh?
That's right.
So you haven't really had to keep
except 2 years in the U.S. Navy.
Okay, that's good. You haven't had to keep your resume up to date. You haven't had to worry about that.
That's right.
But how has ranching changed across those years? What things jump out at you as being things that are done radically differently today than they were then, if anything? I assume something.
Well, in the 40s and early 1950s, we were selling grass-fed steers. And they would go to slaughter to people like Likes in Tampa or packing houses in Jacksonville or Miami. As we began to get Brayfords, they were desired by feedlots. And we'd put them on a rail car in Fort Pierce and ship them by train to Ohio and Indiana and up there. As the feeding and the packing industry shifted to the High Plains, most of our cattle go to Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or Colorado, and they all go by truck. And now we're hit with $4 diesel, and it's 2,000 miles out there, so we're planting crops and things in North Florida and working with Florida feeders to try to feed these cattle here. That's not too good of a deal, but we're under a lot of pressure from transportation and high cost of grain and other things. So the industry is constantly changing, and you have to change with it.
So the economics of beef and cattle markets have changed a lot, as you can imagine, particularly, as you're saying, driven by transportation costs. How about foreign competition? Is that a big factor in your business?
What about what?
Foreign competition, importation of beef from other countries?
The United States is a net exporter. We export a lot more beef than we import. The weak dollar has put a premium on our product and has caused the not much indication of people from Argentina or Brazil wanting to ship cattle here because of the cheap dollar. Right now we're getting cattle into South Korea, Japan, and a lot of other places, and we expect the our foreign markets to put a floor under our markets.
So when the dollar changes, you know, and as we all know, you know, the financial markets fluctuate daily, and even on a large scale they may fluctuate, you know, every 6 months or so. So when the dollar drops in value, can you react to that pretty quickly and kind of ramp up the amount of exporting you do? And then on the other end, when it strengthens again, can you contract? How does that work in your operations?
We don't personally change our way of business as much as we are aware of what's going on. And as the cattle that we have in feedlots in Texas – as more of those go towards the Orient, it helps them to pay more for our cattle. So we understand what's happening, but we don't go overseas to sell cows. We have sold some to Cuba and other Latin American places, but that's a negligible part of our business.
Let me ask you another question. Do you still have, on this large ranch, do you still have cowboys on horseback working the cattle?
All of our cattle are handled by horseback. We have our own brood mares. We raise our horses. And about half of the crew is family, and the other half, a lot of them are second, third generation people born on the ranch.
So when you call it a family operation, the ranch, it's not only only the ownership, but all of the help on the ranch are also multi-generation in many cases, I guess, people on the ranch, huh?
Well, a person comes here to work, we'll tell him he'll treat you like family and maybe even better.
If they come from outside, where do you find qualified cowboys in 2008 who can still work cattle competently? Do they come from other ranches or other than the people who kind of grow up on your ranch? Where do you find them?
Of course, there's a lot of ranches from Kissimmee to Okeechobee to Melbourne and all, and there's, these people, they have to grow up in this business. You can't take a 25-year-old college graduate and teach him how to ride a horse.
I wouldn't think so. You may be able to teach him how to ride a horse, but not to round up cattle and drive cattle, I wouldn't think.
That's right.
And he wouldn't get along too well with the other cowboys who've been there doing that since they were two.
He couldn't even understand their language.
Or vice versa. That's interesting. What about, you know, we're still talking then about how ranching has changed in the last 60 years. What about the whole environmental movement and the ecological aspects of ranching? Are you required to do things differently, and do you find yourself for economic reasons wanting to do different things differently, or for just on principle wanting to do things differently in your ranch than you used to, let's say 40 years ago? How does that work?
The old-time cattlemen did not have a lot of technology and a lot of sprays and things. And they made it succeed by not overgrazing their cattle, and they kept a balance of nature. What we try to do is we have a lot of irrigation canals, and we try to keep live fish of good quality water in there. Those fish eat the mosquito larvae. Because we don't have to mass spray with insecticides, we don't harm the pollinators like the honeybees and all the other insects. So thousands of birds are attracted to eat these insects and dragonflies. And so we do not shoot the predators, the hawks, the owls, the bobcats. They control the rats and rabbits and snakes. This is what they now call biological control. And we've been doing this for a long, long time. And we didn't do it to be environmentalists. We did it because it was economical and practical.
Uh-huh. Well, describe, you know, I think you just mentioned some of the wildlife on the ranch, but has the mix of wildlife on this 65,000 acres, has it changed over the decades? Do you see more of some things and less of others?
Wildlife has completely changed. In 1937, our land was part of the open range, and people hunted year-round. They had Model A's that they killed off the cranes, the deer, the turkeys, and there was very little game left in this area when we fenced the ranch. When the ranches were fenced and posted, why, that protected the game, and we've worked with the wildlife people, and today we have tremendous deer herds, and we have more species of a particular wading birds than we had 50 years ago, and we have greater numbers of them. So we've won Audubon awards and everything for environment for just doing what we do.
Well, that's great. I know one other part of your life that's kind of near and dear to your heart is that You're a photographer of natural wildlife, and I gather have published two coffee table type books of photography of the landscape and the wildlife out there on the Adams Ranch. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about that for just got a minute or so left?
Well, I was given a 35 millimeter camera when I was 10 years old, so I've been taking pictures a long time, and now with digital cameras, why, we have some very good pictures. And I enjoy doing it, and it helps to show people what we're doing with the way that we manage the ranch, and I think it's part of our public relations.
Let's see. I think the name of one of the books, Bud, is A Florida Cattle Ranch, and that's in your name, Alto.
That's right.
Alto, A-L-T-O, Bud Adams, Jr.
And, that's right.
And I guess that's a, you know, I've seen that. That's a beautiful coffee table style of book. There's another one more recent, I think, called Beautiful and Rare Birds of Florida.
That's right.
When did that one come out?
That was done in conjunction with Indian River Community College Foundation. And they helped me put that book out, and it's been out 3 or 4 years.
You can get it, I understand, at Target or at shop.com, or you can get it through your ranch, I believe. I think the website is www.adamsranch, one word, adamsranch.com. So, our listeners can go to your website, adamsranch.com, and look around and see some of these photographs and find out more about what you do on the ranch there. Well, just quickly, a last question. Have you ever had any rustlers?
Had what?
Any rustlers rustling cattle on the ranch?
Yes, we've had people stealing cows. It's not prevalent, but yes, we've had a number of cases.
So did you catch them?
Yes, we did.
Was that a modern rustling operation with semi-tractor trailers and so on?
No, it's mostly people driving along the highway and shooting a cow and butchering part of it and trying to run off with it.
Oh, so small, petty theft. I'd call that poaching more than anything else, I guess.
That's right.
Huh. Another quick question. During the heyday of the cocaine times and all of that in Florida during the 80s, did you have drug runners trying to land on your ranch in remote areas?
Yeah, we were kind of in the flyway here, that they'd fly those planes, and we'd see them pass over the ranch. Mostly they were dropping stuff in Okeechobee or Osceola counties. And it was really a bad situation.
Well, Bud Adams, Jr., you've had quite a life and still going strong, obviously, 82 years old and on the same land and 60 years running that ranch, and you're still doing great, and I appreciate you being on with us here today to talk about the Adams Ranch as my guest on American Variety. I want to thank all of you for listening, and especially my new listeners in the WQCS broadcast area on their HD Channel 2. And I hope you'll all tune in again next Sunday, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.